There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And this is Jeff Poor filling in for Sean Sullivan today on this crisp November afternoon. 251-343-0106 is the number. I want to hear from you. That's text and phone. Joining us this hour is Steve McNair. He's a Republican candidate for House District 97 here in Mobile, and he's got a competitive race, I think. But it's good to have you in the studio today,
Jeff. I appreciate that. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So I've heard some of your ads. I've read a little bit about your race, and I guess first of all, just talk a little bit about your district and how that's really changed and made it a competitive race.
So this district was redrawn only about a year ago. So there's the traditional redistricting that we went through that was led by the Republican majority, but this particular district was actually redrawn by the Democratic caucus at the local level after it went to a judge. And the objective was to make it a little more equitable, a little more fair in terms of competition for the district. And so now that it's been redrawn, it has become much more competitive for a person like myself to run in this race. And so the lines have been redrawn. It's kind of a whole new ball game. And so, you know, the lines go all the way up to the Saraland Chickasaw border.
Right.
That's the northern portion. And then it follows the coast the river all the way through Midtown, Downtown, Dolphin Island Parkway to the Dog River Bridge. And then it goes inland in portions all the way to Florida Street and Sage Avenue.
So it's a lot of Midtown and a lot of, the sort of downtown corridor there.
That's right. It's a lot of Midtown, a lot of downtown. It's two municipalities. It's two school systems. It includes a two-year college, Austell, Airbus, the future I-10 bridge, the Downtown Economic Center, Brookley Field. I mean, this is the economic engine of the entire Gulf Coast in this district.
So for a lot of us that are kind of in that Montgomery bubble sometimes, and as a guy I consider myself a Mobile guy, but I get caught up in it too, and you sometimes just kind of take the whole Mobile Bay in the Baldwin County for granted, I think, in that Montgomery bubble. But just talk a little bit about, like, the issues I think that are specific to your district, and particularly what you're hearing on the campaign trail from people, other than, I guess, the I-10 bridge is the obvious one, but beyond that.
Sure. And to touch on what you started with there about Mobile being treated a little differently or maybe being not understood by everybody across the state, especially in Montgomery, I couldn't agree more, and Mobilians couldn't agree more. And so that's a big part of what I'm trying to do, is to elevate the level of conversation in Montgomery about the fact that Mobile is a major center for our state and can be much more, but we're going to require the right attention and the right resources from Montgomery. And right now, we're just not getting it. We're not getting the attention. And when you look back at the BP oil spill settlement, it's pretty obvious, based on that allocation, that we're not being taken seriously.
Yeah, because when you talk to people, and I'll say this about Walt Maddox, a Democratic candidate for governor, when he talks about Mobile, he refers to Mobile as down there. And in a lot of people's heads, and I think this is true. I mean, I grew up in Birmingham. I went to Auburn, and I really kind of cut my teeth in journalism here in Mobile. But when you talk to people in that sort of Huntsville to Montgomery corridor, you might as well be referring to Mexico when you talk about Mobile. It's just so far away in their mind, and they really consider, like, what the needs for Mobile, they're not the same as Baldwin County, Orange Beach, Gulf Shores, Foley, and all these other places. It's really a distinct set of problems, a distinct set of needs. And I guess your aim is to kind of bring those to the fore in the legislature.
That's exactly right. The current representative for this district is not fighting hard enough for this district in terms of educating legislators on the economic impact that we currently have and the potential if infrastructure money was put into the port, if more money was put into the expansion of the I-10 bridge, and if more money was put into public education in Mobile and the two-year college system. Mobile is an untapped, unlimited market in terms of expansion. But we've got to convince them that we exist and that Huntsville and Birmingham and Montgomery are not the only cities in our state.
And I think, tell me if I'm, you would think there's probably a longer list of like goals and needs and things for your district specifically, just given the port and Austell, the bridge, going up and down the river there. There's a lot of things that really require state resources, so that that lends itself to really needing somebody who's kind of on top of things when you talk about the sort of day-to-day process of the Alabama State Legislature.
Those are some of the big issues that you mentioned. And also, when it comes to public education, you know, Mobile has 9 failing public schools. That's the most failing public number of public schools for any county system in the state. And so we've got to receive more resources and more attention from Montgomery if we're going to turn that around. And that is the building block that will then lead to being able to recruit more industry and expand industry, because you can't recruit more industry and expand the port and do all these things if you don't have a trained workforce and an educated workforce. You have to educate and train first. And that's where we need to start building from.
Yeah, because when you talk to these, and this is, I assume, is true for here, but it probably goes beyond here into other parts of the state, that they could bring in the big fish and, you know, whatever they need to do with the tax incentives and stuff. But one of the elements is getting the workforce, or having a workforce that's trained, that has the skills that are needed to do whatever XYZ widget company needs them to do. And that's kind of where I think the education end of it isn't sufficiently addressed. At least tangibly, you could see that it's not being addressed, or it hasn't been addressed. You'd have a more prepared workforce.
It's really not being addressed. And I'll tell you this, there was the air show in London just a few months ago. And, you know, of course, Mobile just landed Bombardier and is expanding the aerospace industry. George Talbot, who works for the mayor's office, was live on the radio from London. And he said that Mobile really was the talk of the conference and that everybody was excited about where we're going with Airbus and Bombardier. But he articulated very quickly on there saying, we just don't have the trained workforce right now to expand a lot of these industries. And so that's a major problem. We're going to continue to see the brain drain in Mobile. We're going to continue to see people not come home and build their community, build their lives in this community. And we have to give students and also parents the opportunities to succeed, the chances to succeed that the rest of the state currently has.
You know, that element of the education system, I think, is important, but I think a lot of people tend to focus on the primary education, the K-12, these things. Can you talk a little bit about that, where you're at, and what do you think, you know, the Alabama Accountability Act's been under fire? I think the AEA is trying to make a comeback. At least they're kind of in front of it with the press and stuff. Again, there's some stories making the rounds. But what is the Steve McNair education policy platform, planking your platform?
I'm interested in not leaving any tool in the toolbox. And what I mean by that is if charter schools work in Selma but not in Mobile, then let them do it. Okay. If the Accountability Act is improving the quality of life and education for children in some part of Alabama, then they should do that. Local flexibility and local autonomy, I think, is the name of the game when it comes to funding public education. And being a public school graduate from Murphy High School, from this district, this is something I take very seriously. I wouldn't be sitting in this chair talking to you today if I hadn't gone to Murphy High School. And so that's something that I want to be able to continue for our children and grandchildren. And so across the rest of the state, we don't want to tie anybody's hands based on some kind of policy in Montgomery that's a one-size-fits-all that clearly is not fitting anybody when we're between 49th and 47th in every category in education.
Well, and you, I've heard some of your ads on the station, and you talk about an education lottery. That's not a traditional Republican policy endeavor, you know, just based on the last 20, 30 years. But he talked a little bit about that and where are you on the lottery and maybe some of the specifics, you know, because if you do a lottery, then you got a lot of other gambling issues that sort of are impacted.
Right now, the lottery is something that we need to introduce legislation in 2019 to allow the voters of Alabama to vote on an education lottery. And an education lottery is really the only format that I would support. But I would not support it if it means taking money out of the education trust fund and supplementing it with the lottery revenue. The lottery revenue should be on top of the education trust fund. We shouldn't rob Peter to pay Paul, and we've seen how that works in Florida. That's exactly what they did, right. Was they took their money out of the education trust fund and supplemented it with the lottery, and nothing improved. We are so far behind, we have to build on what we currently have.
All right. Well, Steve McNair joining us in the studio on FM Talk 106.5. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 251-343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on Midday Mobile. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 251-343-0106. In studio with us, holding over from the last segment, is Steve McNair, running for Alabama House District 97 as a Republican. We're getting down to crunch time, 4 or 5 days away. Talk a little bit about the ground game and what you got in store and what you're going to do to try to wrap this thing up on Election Day.
Well, I tell you, nobody can say that we haven't worked hard on this campaign. I mean, with the get out the vote effort and with the door knocking and the phone calls, and we have left no stone left unturned. And it's been really exciting to meet so many great people in this district that that have a lot of issues that maybe you wouldn't otherwise know about or bring up a lot of things. But the major concerns that I'm hearing on the campaign trail are education, adequate pay for jobs, but primarily, when I knock on somebody's door and I ask them who the representative is, they don't know.
Right.
They're not engaged in the process. They don't know what their current representative has done for them. They don't know who the representative even is. And I ask him, and I always say, well, do you know who your city councilman is? Well, sure. Do you know who the mayor is? Sure.
Right.
Well, you should know your state representative, and they should be in your district working hard. And so that's what I plan to do, is have a lot of town hall forums and really engage and continue to engage with everybody in District 97, because it's an eclectic district. I mean, we have a lot of different neighborhoods with a lot of different needs. As I said, two different cities, two school systems. So it's going to take a lot of hands-on effort once we win this race to keep things going and really make a positive change.
Yeah, and it's changed over the last 10, 15 years, I think, especially kind of downtown's kind of revitalized, and it's becoming a place where people are moving and living. I can remember, growing up in Mobile, we lived here for a little while when I was a kid, and there'd be tumbleweeds rolling down the streets, in Dolphin Street, and there was just not much going on. But I guess it's a different ballgame now with actual different kind of, at least a different kind of constituency.
We're seeing a big shift of people moving from the suburbs back to Midtown, back to downtown, and we have a real opportunity here to focus on that and continue to expand while also expanding Brookley Field, while expanding Airbus, and working in tandem. I mean, if we ever get the I-10 bridge, that's going to do so much in terms of infrastructure improvements, bringing in more industry. We have the Amazon distribution center. Of course, we have the Walmart distribution center. Well, those are a lot of 18-wheelers. And so we need to expand this infrastructure. And the port, deepening the channel, that has the potential of increasing business at the port by 100%. Now, it has to be done in an environmentally sympathetic way. We don't want to destroy our rivers and destroy Dolphin Island in the name of bigger boats. But at the same time, if we can do that with environmental sensitivity, then it could be a huge boom for downtown Mobile.
Yeah, well, before we get to a call, you mentioned, the gas tax, I think, is going to be a big issue this next session. Where are you on the gas tax? You talk to a lot of members of the legislature, and they say it hasn't been anything done to it since 1992. It's been a while. We're overdue. is a gas tax really going to be the answer to get any, you know, the funding you need to get the matching funds from the federal government and things like that? Where are you on that?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of different information, either from the road builders or from the trucking industry, and there's no question that we have a real infrastructure problem across the entire state. I mean, there's a lot of roads and bridges in Alabama that haven't been maintained since FDR was president.
Right.
I mean, even in District 97, you know, we're doing a lot of door knocking down on Dolphin Island Parkway. There's a lot of dirt roads down there that people just don't even know about. And so we've got to focus on that, and I'm not sold on raising taxes in terms of a gas tax, another sales tax, another regressive sales tax, quite yet, without having the proper data. But I will say this. The trucking industry has indicated that they are happy to pay more in terms of a gas tax or a diesel tax.
A diesel tax. Yeah.
I would much rather focus on a diesel tax and also implement weigh stations at the state borders, which would then regulate trucking in a way that does not destroy our roads and bridges, because it's not the sedans on the interstate that are causing the damage. It's overweight 18-wheelers.
It's like what they do in Florida, where you see so many weigh stations, especially right when you cross that state line.
Right.
Let me ask you this, just on the same topic. ALDOT is, I think a lot of people, especially politicians, are really reluctant to criticize the job ALDOT's doing, and they won't do it because they want their pothole filled, they want their, you know, whatever their road project is done. So when you talk to these county commissioners, these mayors, they're not particularly happy with the job ALDOT's doing, but they won't publicly criticize ALDOT. You know, you have a view of the kind of the job the Alabama Department of Transportation is doing, and you know, do you think maybe there's some politics at play there?
We've had a fair amount of interactions with ALDOT in negotiating the design for the potential Mobile I-10 River Bridge. And so that is something where it's taken some time to kind of bring ALDOT to our side to understand the importance of it, and not just for larger 18-wheelers and more cars, but also for pedestrian access, for bicycle access, for making it something important that we can be proud of for generations, because we don't want to put another Band-Aid on our infrastructure down here and kick the can to our grandkids. This is our once-in-a-generation opportunity to do something special and improve everybody's quality of life in Mobile.
All right. Well, we got Craig on the line. Craig in Mobile joining us on FM Talk 106.5. What do you got for us?
I would like to find out, Steve, what your thoughts are on moving Mobile Regional out to Brookley Field, and I'll get off and let you expand on that.
Sure. I've been to some public forums in Dolphin Island Parkway and around Brookley Field, and I can tell you that there's a lot of hesitation from the community to make this switch immediately, because there's a lot of misinformation and there's a lot of unknowns right now. You know, there's a master plan that is currently being conducted by the Airport Authority, which has not been published, but once that is published, we'll have a much larger idea, or much more clear idea, of does it make sense and how it's going to impact the neighborhoods. And a lot of people don't understand that currently, Brookley Field is an active airport. I mean, we have large planes coming in from FedEx and other shipping companies. And so the plan is to relocate that, of course, to Westmobile and to put the commercial traffic downtown, which would be smaller airplanes and also be a lot more quiet. But things like the flight patterns, we're just going to have to make sure that we don't disrupt neighborhoods and don't lower the quality of life if we switch those airports. So I'm in favor of it if it can work in a sympathetic way that doesn't detract from the quality of life from the surrounding area.
Well, it may be a discussion for another time, but the idea that the airport is where it is, it seems to take away a little bit from downtown, because it's a haul to get from downtown all the way out to Bates Field. Do you think that would improve maybe downtown by moving it to Brookley and make a better quality of life for people in your district?
I think without question, if you can take an Uber from the airport to a downtown hotel in less than 10 minutes, if you can get to the cruise ship in 5 minutes, you know, those are the kind of things that really are going to improve the number of people staying in downtown hotels and restaurants. And when you look at the market share of the airport right now in Westmobile, how many times do you talk to somebody and they say, I'm going on vacation, but I have to drive to Pensacola?
Right.
I'm going to fly out of Gulfport. I've got to go to New Orleans.
Right.
We are losing, those are local people, and we're losing those dollars. And right now in Baldwin County, it doesn't make sense for them at all to drive all the way to Westmobile. So we're losing that market to Pensacola. So the projection is that by placing it in a more central location, we bring those locals to the table. And actually, at that point, we can increase the amount of flights we have in terms of direct flights, cheaper airlines, and lower the prices.
All right. We got one more call real quick before the bottom of the hour. John in Mobile. John, what do you got for us?
Yes, I was just wondering how Mr. McNair feels about one medical marijuana and two recreational marijuana, the legalization of those, and I'll hang up.
All right, thanks for that, John. Where are you on the marijuana issue?
I think I'm going to punt on those right now. I don't have any information about it. That's not something that we've been talking about in our campaign, and you know, I would need to sit down and have a pretty serious conversation before we took a position on that.
Yeah, because you see a lot of these. I guess it's put on as a referendum on a ballot, and then you know, and especially in a lot of states, they will use their marijuana issue as a get out the vote effort for Democrats. So in Florida, you'll have John Morgan on talking about medical marijuana in Florida, and you're like, why is he doing an ad about medical marijuana? Well, the trial lawyers want Democrats to show up at the polls, and it's kind of like one of those issues. It's one of those issues that really gets people engaged in the political situation. But anyway, let's wrap it up here. Talk about, you know, where people can learn more about your campaign and, you know, what they do if they want to, you know, get in touch with you or find you on social media.
You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. It's McNair for House 97. And you can find us online at votemcnair.com. We have the full platform about infrastructure, education, improving Mobile, and our plans for making this a better district and our plans for going to Montgomery.
All right, well, there you have it with Steve McNair running for House District 97, competitive race. You know, you've got a race that's with a new drawn district. I think it's one of the more competitive races in the state of Alabama, particularly in a state where you don't have a lot of competitive races. Things are pretty much drawn where they are. So it's one we're going to watch, I think, on Tuesday night, and that may give us kind of an idea of kind of where Mobile is politically, I think.
And with this last minute, I do have one more question for you, Stephen. What are your Tuesday plans? What are your plans for Election Day? You gonna go vote, and then what?
And then it's all about wrangling everybody where they need to be, the poll greeters, the poll watchers, making sure that everything stays above board, making sure that we have the people in the right places and getting the data to our people, and, of course, making those last-minute phone calls and encouraging everybody to get out and vote.
All right, there you have it. Steve McNair running for House District 97. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And it's Jeff Poore filling in for Sean Sullivan today on FM Talk 106.5 on this Friday afternoon. Joining us now on the line is Secretary of State John Merrill, who's, kind of found himself in the middle of the spotlight again with an AL.com story and voter suppression. But we got a lot to talk about, especially with the election coming up on Tuesday. Secretary Merrill, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me, my friend. Great to be with you.
Yeah, well, it's made its way around the state. And for people that don't know, there's a voter suppression story that AL.com, Paul Gaddis and Lee Roop, they put out yesterday. And it essentially accuses it makes the accusation that voters are having their votes suppressed and that are students in a historically black college, two of them, Alabama A&M and Oakman College. And I think you say otherwise. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I don't say otherwise. The numbers say otherwise. I think it's important to know that people are entitled to their own opinion, but they're not entitled to their own facts. So what are the facts? The facts are that since January the 19th, 2015, which is the day I became Secretary of State, we've registered 1,136,408 new voters. We now have 3,457,667 registered voters in Alabama. Now, someone might say, well, you've removed some people from the voter rolls. And we have. We've removed more than 670,000 people from the voter rolls because those people have either moved away, they passed away, or they've been put away. And whenever that happens, they need to come off the voter rolls. I don't know what it is with all these liberals that think that you need 6 million voters in a state that only has a population of 4.8 million. That just doesn't make sense to me. Well, so we're going to maintain the voter rolls according to the standard that's prescribed by law.
Right, now, you're just following federal and state law
when you got that right.
Right, so it's not like you're sitting from your perch in Montgomery thinking, I'm going to extract these voters from the voter logs because I want Republicans to win. There's actually a protocol that you're following.
That's right. And if you don't follow that protocol, then you can go to jail. And I have no interest in going to jail. And I have no interest in being penalized because we're doing anything other than following the law. And that's what we're going to continue to do. Now, I do think it's important to note that there are times when people are placed on the inactive status as far as their voter registration record is concerned. And if they are placed on the inactive status, they can determine whether or not they're inactive prior to arriving at the polls. They can do that by visiting our website at alabamavotes.gov. They can do that by downloading the mobile app as Vote for Alabama. They can do that by contacting their local board of registrar's office and checking on the status of their particular voter registration record. All they have to do, if they do it electronically, is to have a valid Alabama driver's license, and then they can do it on their own without ever involving anyone else. Now, if they are inactive now, since it's 4 days before the election, then you cannot update your record until you get to the polls.
Right.
So you have to go to the polls, fill out a form that's a voter update form, make sure we know who you are, validate that you're who you say you are, and then you'll be able to cast a regular ballot that day. Not a provisional ballot, but a regular ballot that day. Now, you should know that we have 301,914 inactive voters in the state of Alabama as of today. 223,580 of those are on the inactive rolls due to the NVRA, the National Voter Registration Act, mailer that we sent to all registered voters in the state. You should also know that the number of people that are negatively impacted in that particular polling site in Madison County at Alabama A&M is a total number of 1,021. Now, that number has been the number since January of 2017. You should also know that since May the 1st, 2018, only 106 of those people have become inactive. 106. So there's no voter suppression there, my friend.
Well, what, you know, the timing of this is curious, as we're right on the eve of an election. But, and this kind of came up a little in the congressional district, Alabama 3, with Mallory Hagan. She's running against Mike Rogers, who's the incumbent. She's trying to make this same point, I think. Is my impression that this, they think for whatever, or Democrats think for whatever reason, that this is a something that motivates their base, that gets out voters. Are you kind of surprised that, I guess the question is this to be expected coming into an election, especially this close?
First of all, nothing surprises me in politics, okay? That's the first thing. Second thing is, it doesn't surprise me that some candidates will do anything to try to gain an advantage and be in a more formidable position to be successful in their campaign. That's what you're seeing from the candidate that you just identified and the others up in the 5th Congressional District who are barking up the wrong tree, because they don't have a platform that has drawn candidates to their candidacy. They don't have issues that are important to the people that live in that area that have motivated them to support their candidacy. Then they have chosen to make things up that don't exist to try to generate some interest in their candidacy, so hopefully they'll be more competitive on November the 6th.
Yeah, and the other things that I think they like to bring up is the voter ID thing and how that disenfranchises. But you have a kind of a, you talk about this a lot when I've seen you around the state, where you have a system in place where you will make sure if somebody wants an ID so that they can vote, that they can get one.
Look, we go to every county at least one time every year. Last year we made over 100 visits. This year we've made over 100 visits to the counties, to festivals, events, activities, general stations that have been created just for the purpose of providing voter IDs. We do that in spite of the fact that in every county in the state, every day that the courthouse is open, the board of registrar's office is open, and so you can get a free voter ID every day of the year that someone's working at the courthouse. But in spite of that, if somebody can't make it to the courthouse, if somebody can't make it to one of the events, festivals, or activities where we've got the mobile unit set up, if they will call 334-242-7200, we will send somebody to their house, and we will make them an ID for them at their house, and we will do that for free.
All right. Well, and we'll wrap it up on this. Just talk about what you're expecting on Tuesday. I think you have some predictions or some prognostications about where we're looking at it turnout and how you're kind of gearing up for that.
Yeah, we think we're going to be somewhere between about 35% and 40% of our registered voters go to the polls, cast their ballot for the candidate of their choice on Election Day. We think that is in line with what we had anticipated based on previous experience in utilizing other election results in other competitions that we've experienced, mm-hmm. as well as the interest that we've seen in this race to date.
Yeah, and is it, you're getting a little bit of, I think, a bounce maybe. There's been a lot of things in politics, the Kavanaugh effect and all that. I mean, not what it's doing politically, but is that something that is kind of a variable that you would think that's maybe driving out turnout a little bit more than
it
might be?
Well, certainly it is on the Republican side, because I think people have realized, look, we're tired of all this mess. We're tired of people making things up. We're tired of people acting irresponsibly when it comes to challenging things that are factually based, and just because they don't like them or just because they're not in charge politically anymore, they just choose to make up things. And I think people are tired of that. There's a reason Donald Trump's the president of the United States.
Well, tell us what is going into Election Day, and even on Election Day, what is the agenda for John Merrill? Where are you at? Do you hit polling places? Do you do spot checks? Or how does that work for you?
We do, and we will actually have some teams that will be dispatched that will go to certain parts of the state that will look into elections that are ongoing. We'll make sure that those concerns that have been introduced to us are investigated, and we'll make sure that people have a right to voice their concerns and have it properly recorded and documented whenever that's introduced to us. We think that's very, very important.
And how's your race looking? I know you got a Democratic opponent, Heather Milam. Seen her here and there, but I will say this. She's the only Democrat running statewide that did not get the Aniston Starr's endorsement. You did. How do you feel about your race?
Well, I feel like we have shared our message with the voters across the state of Alabama. We've been very, very consistent in informing them about what we're doing. You know, I travel to all 67 counties at least one time every year. I have been to 58 of the 67 counties since January the 1st of this year for 461 unique visits to those 58 counties that I've been to. We continue to share our word with the people of Alabama, and I think they're going to respond accordingly on Tuesday, November the 6th.
All right. Well, there you have it. Secretary of State John Merrill, thanks for coming on Midday Mobile. And like you said, just give the listeners one more shot at the at where they could go find out more if they have questions about Tuesday.
Thank you, my friend. Call me anytime.
All right. Thanks for coming on. Well, so I think it's alabamavotes.gov if you want to look at that. They also have an app. But if you do go to the polling precinct and you're on the inactive roll, they will rectify that at the polling location, given we're this close to to the election.
And that website you mentioned, what is it again?
AlabamaVotes.gov.
And they've got all kinds of good information.
Yeah, you could find out who donated to who, and you could find out your polling precinct. So it's kind of the go-to spot for people kind of, I guess, curious about what's going on. Mm-hmm. And if you really want to do a deep dive into who's giving money to who in these elections, it's the go-to for state races. Federal races, there's the FEC website. But for the state races, that's your go-to, I think. Well, this has been fun for the last 2 days, and mm-hmm. I will be back on Wednesday, the day after the election, live from Huntsville, because, for whatever reason.
Do a little Election Day wrap-up on Wednesday.
Yeah, filling in for Sean Sullivan. But we got a...
Coming up next, Sean Sullivan had a conversation earlier with Ed Rowland from Taylor Martino, and we're going to run that one back. But great job this week, Jeff.
All right, well, thanks for having me in, guys, and we'll talk to you next week on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Talking with my buddy Ed Rowland from Taylor Martino. You know, last time you and I were together, we were talking about football, as always. And I was thinking about this. Not only is it true having the experience to see that defense come in, like you and I talked about last time, but also the idea of having a proven commodity. As we hear every year, you and I talk recruiting. Oh, the Tide's going to get this player. Auburn's going to get this player. They're unproven.
That's right. You know, just like in college recruiting, you know, you've got these star players, the 3-star, 4-star, 5-star
players.
This
is the next big thing.
Right. And everybody is just, anxiously awaiting this next player. But until he gets on the field, you really have no idea. And every true college football fan that's honest knows that. Well, it's the same thing in the practice of law. I mean, you know, there are attorneys out there that are selling themselves as the greatest lawyers in the world. But do they get in the courtroom? That's where.
Yeah, how many snaps have they had? Stick with it here. Yeah.
That's right. You know, and I'd like to see those attorneys that tout themselves as so great get in the courtroom. And that's what we do. And we may not advertise as much because we don't have time because we're in the courtroom. But that's where greatness is forged.
Yeah, the quarterback that sits there with the headset on the clipboard doesn't win any football games. It is the quarterback that's taken the snap, that's on the field, and that has seen those defenses laid out in front of him.
Just like in the practice of law, just like with the lawyer that you're selecting, make sure that you're choosing someone that knows how to finish the case. If they don't know how to finish the case, then your case is in trouble from the very beginning.
Yeah, but that is overwhelming to think about. Here's a scenario in the court of law where you would never put somebody who was completely inexperienced in football up against a pro team. But in the world of legal, in the world of law, that set of, if you don't know what you're doing, that's where you end up.
Well, you can talk as big as you want to in the practice of law, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that do. But when it comes time to go to court, that's where you're going to put your money where your mouth is. And if you don't know what you're doing, just like on the college football field or the pro football field, you're going to get shown your hand if you don't know what you're doing.
And the difference here is we only get one game. We only get one time to go to trial. Even with all we're talking about with the football team, they can go back the following Saturday and do this again. This is our one chance of getting justice.
When somebody has been hurt and their life has been changed, it's a tremendous pressure because, you do have that one time to help them or change their life because they're financially destitute.
Yeah, even though you've had the experience of taking all the snaps, being in all those courtrooms, for us, this is the one big championship game. Everything's riding on that.
Yep, and that's what I tell the jury, that I've been living this case for X number of years, and that, to them, this may not seem a big deal or whatever, but this is the one opportunity that we have that we've been waiting for several years to get here and to speak to them. And I think they appreciate that, and I think my clients do as well, because we have that one opportunity. It's either won or lost right there.
Yeah, it's the biggest game of our lives, and we'd love to have somebody quarterback in that who feels the same way. So talk to folks here. They have that situation, this thing that's happened to them, that like you and I have talked about in the past. I love it. You go through and you say, is it your fault? No. Okay. Did you do something to contribute? No. Are you injured? Are you, then these, if you answer those questions yes, then they need to get in touch with you.
Right. I mean, obviously, people aren't going to call me who are at fault for their injuries. I mean, and if you're not at fault for your injuries, what do you have to feel guilty for? So I spend a lot of time, trying to remove any type of guilt for protecting your own rights as an American citizen.
It's a fair question, though, for somebody to ask themselves, hey, am I injured? Have I lost? And was it my fault?
Absolutely. And if it's not your fault, then you should be compensated fairly. And what's wrong with being treated fairly? Isn't that what this country's about?
That's right. And make sure we have a good QB when we line up out there. Okay, people want to talk to you about their case, their situation. Just even have a consultation just to find out what your take on it is. How do they get in touch with you, Ed?
You can call us at 433-3131 here in Mobile, or you can Google Taylor Martino Law Firm, Mobile, Alabama, and you will definitely find us.
Ed, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Sean.
Ed Brown with Taylor Martino.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.